Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 16th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we talk with brewer Thomas Larson of Wincoop Brewing Company, Denver's oldest brew pub. Thomas is one of those fairly rare professional brewers who didn't start off home brewing. However, as you'll hear, Thomas does have the home brewing spirit and lets us in on some tips to make our beers better. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Man, it is hot in this part of the world, in our part of the country. It's been 100 degrees or above every day for the past couple of weeks, and for you metrically inclined people, that's around 38 Celsius. And hot weather is not the best for brewing, but it's great for grilling and barbecuing. In this week's episode of Basic Brewing Video, Steve Wilkes outdoes himself. He cooks up some pulled pork, pork ribs, beef ribs, and grilled chicken, using beer, of course, as an ingredient along the way. It's amazing, amazing stuff. Also, while we're on the topic of Basic Brewing Video, I'm working on putting a Flash-based video on the Basic Brewing Video site for those of you who have been having trouble with the latest format and QuickTime and such. I'll still maintain the current format on the RSS feed for those of you with iPods and Apple TV and all that stuff, but I'll add the embedded Flash movie on the site to give you a choice, and that should happen, I hope, by the end of the week. So cross your fingers there and check back. Let's take a look in the mailbag. Greg from Albuquerque, New Mexico writes in, "I'm not sure whether this is already widely known, but boilover is the bane of my existence, and I learned a new trick to avoid it this weekend. I was brewing a partial mash IPA this weekend that looked like it was going to boil over. I blew on the boil a few times, and to my astonishment, it knocked the boilover right down. I'm going to get a clip-on fan to blow air on my brew pot for my next brew session. Sorry if this is already a widely known tip, but I thought I would pass it on for other newbies like myself." Well, thanks for the tip, Greg. I think I've heard or read discussion of using a clip-on fan. I believe it was in connection with the Brew Crazy podcast. Now, blowing on the wort or fanning the wort is one solution to boilovers, and I do agree that boilovers are one of the biggest problems facing new brewers. You might have heard, I think I mentioned it on this program, my first batch of beer boiled over on the stove, and with the boil over went most of my hops. So in addition to screwing up your recipe, boilovers can also be very hard to clean up. Nothing like encrusted burned extract on the stove to test a marriage or a relationship with a significant other who's sharing that kitchen. Now, my trick in avoiding boilovers is, number one, stick close by the brew pot when it gets close to boiling, when it gets close to coming up to the boil. It only takes a moment for a brew pot to get out of control and boil over if you're not careful. If you see your brew is getting a little crazy, shut off the fire. Let it sit for a minute or two, then gradually add the heat to bring it back up to a more stable boil. Once you get a stable boil going, you don't have to watch it that closely. Also, when you're adding extract to the boil, take it off the heat as you're doing so and add it slowly. Once the extract is stirred in and dissolved, bring on the heat again gradually and take it back to the boil that way, and you should be okay. This is the kind of thing that comes with a bit of patience, but as long as you pay attention and watch for the signs of a boil over, you can take control of that problem fairly easily. Now, you know, I say that, but I had a boilover recently on the patio, and it was because I was washing the mash tun when I should have been watching the kettle. Because of the hot temperatures, it came up to the boil a little more quickly than I was anticipating. So luckily, it wasn't that violent a boilover, and I didn't lose much wort over the side of the kettle there. Steve from Sterling Heights, Michigan writes, "Do you carbonate mead? I used champagne yeast. Is it the same for mead as for beer, priming sugar before bottling? Well, yeah, Steve, you can carbonate mead. In fact, my first several batches were just a light, plain mead that I carbonated by bottle conditioning, just like beer. They came out great, a lot like champagne, in fact, very dry and sparkly, and they tasted wonderful and looked like champagne in a crystal flute, you know, like a champagne flute. Now, I used the same strategy, the same priming strategy as I used for beer, 3/4 cup of dextrose per 5 gallons. Now, it took the mead a little longer to carbonate, and I'm assuming that that's because the yeast was fairly stressed from the higher alcohol. So you could repitch a packet of yeast at bottling time. And if you've used potassium sorbate or something else to inhibit the yeast in your mead, you're not going to be able to carbonate with bottle conditioning. And if you've done that to have a sweet mead, you definitely don't want to repitch. You don't want more fermentable sugars in the bottle than just the traditional amount for priming, because you can have bottle bombs. However, if you did let the yeast reach final gravity and then prime, as in bottling a beer, you should be okay and you should get a sparkling mead. Jason from Friendswood, Texas, writes in with another carbonation question. I'm in the bottling stage with a Mexican cerveza and had originally planned to bottle the entire batch. As I've run out of homebrew, I'm considering just putting this beer in my tap-a-draft system. When I bought my priming sugar, I had purchased the Cooper's carbonation drops to give them a try. Do you have any idea how many drops I should use in a 6-liter bottle? Well, Jason, if I were you, I'd save the carbonation drops for priming individual bottles and use either dextrose or just plain table sugar for priming the 6 liters. It'd have to be cheaper. I haven't checked, but I would bet that it would be cheaper to do so. As far as the amount to use, go to Google and do a search for priming sugar calculator. You'll find several online tools that you can use to figure out how much sugar to use. That's just the way I would do it, just my 2 cents. Okay, on to our interview with Thomas Larson of Wynkoop Brewing Company in Denver, Colorado. This is the last of the interviews we recorded on our trip to the National Homebrewers Conference, and as you can see, we got a ton of great stuff while we were out there. Well worth the trip. In the next episode of Basic Brewing Video, by the way, we'll have a video tour of Wynkoop, so you'll want to look for that. We sat down with Thomas in the pool hall upstairs in the brew pub. They've got about 20 pool tables up there. It's a very big room, and it was full of happy people gearing up to go watch the Rockies play the Yankees down the street. So there's a fair amount of background noise, but, you know, it's a pub. People are having fun drinking beers. Steve Wilkes and I talked to Thomas to get his background in brewing and to get some tips on making beers of our own with unique character. Welcome, Thomas, to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for coming down. It's been kind of fun.
So far, kind of fun. A ringing endorsement. Well, we sampled some of your beers, and wonderful beers, and you've got a wide variety of brews, and I want to talk to you a bit about that, about how your strategy in bringing those different flavors together. But I want to talk to you a bit about your background. We always start when we talk to professional brewers about their background, and you're kind of a rare animal in that you did not start out as a home brewer. How did you come to brewing?
Well, I mean, actually, I started out getting, you know, around in the brew pubs. For one, my oldest brother was an executive chef at a brew pub in Colorado Springs, so I kind of knew, you know, what was going on there. And then my middle brother ran the bottling line at the old Broadway Brewing Company, which was actually half owned by the Wynkoop, half owned by Flying Dog. And so I'd go down there, you know, quite a bit, you know, and help him do some quality control as he was running the bottling line. And, you know, that kind of got me into it, you know, into the craft beer scene, you know, and that. And I was working in a lame bartending job up in the casinos. It really wasn't that lame, but, you know, it definitely left a lot to be desired. And I came down, I got tired of it, came down to the Wynkoop, and, and applied for a job, just whatever they had. And all they had was busing at that moment. And I was like, that's fine. I'll take it. And within a few months, a position opened up in the brewery for me to wash kegs. I start out washing kegs. I'm like, that's fine. I'll start there. And while I was doing that to help me get some more experience and see more of the thing, my old boss then, Kyle Karstens, he has his own brew pub now, but he told me to go, that they were looking for bottling line people at Great Divide. So I went and worked at Great Divide for probably 8 months, maybe a year, during this time. And then when they had, something full-time, they had, some full-time space for me available here, I jumped at the chance. And, I did that, did full-time, here, and I've been running the brewery for the last 6 years. So I guess it was like 9 years ago I started here, So 8.5 years I started washing kegs, and then now I'm running the brewery.
So you are an advocate of starting from the bottom and just doing what you can to get your foot in the door. And
definitely. I mean, you have to be willing to do everything, because especially if you're running a show, and you don't have somebody to do it, you're going to have to do it yourself anyway. So if you have, if you're scared, if you're scared to get your hands dirty, it's kind of pointless, because you're going to have to at some point.
Now, talk about the kind of philosophy behind the beers here at WinCoop. Steve and I started the week at Avery Brewing Company, and they're very strong beers, and they know that they are pushing the limit, pushing the edge, and they recruit customers who think along those same lines. You're in a different situation here.
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of look at us as the gateway brewery. We're we get quite a varied customer base here, and we have to, I have to fight very hard to try and to get these people to stop drinking Budweiser and Coors Light. We still offer those two in bottles here. So, my goal is to make, I still make some, some big crazy beers, but that's not my mainstay. I make a well-balanced amber. I make a light beer. It's, not necessarily big time proud of that one, but it's, it's something I do, because what I'm trying to do is turn people into liking craft beer and realize that's the reason I make so many styles, because my philosophy is that there's a style out there for everybody, and it's not a pale, it's not a pale American lager. There's a style out there from that's, Coors is going big with their Blue Moon wit beer, and that's, that's a good representation of a wit beer. I want to see more people drinking from small independent places, but at least they're making headway in turning people into liking craft beer and realizing, one thing that has come about in the year, in the craft beer revolution, you have a lot of people who think all craft beer is dark and bitter. So you have to try and, remove that stereotype that all craft beer is dark, heavy, and bitter. And so that's why I make such a varied, such varied styles of beers, is because I want people to realize, like, look, there's tons of flavors here, and they're not necessarily bitter. Some are, some aren't. I have a Schwarz beer. That's a classic beer style that I love turning people onto, because you get people who think it's a dark beer and it's going to be heavy and bitter. And I've turned more people on, turned on people onto craft beer with that style than probably any other, because they drink it and they're like, wow, that's not heavy and it's not a bitter beer. Wow, that's pretty good. You get the roasted flavors without it being flavored. That is a great, to me, that's a great style to turn people into craft beer.
And Steve and I have talked about both on the show and off about our desire to get into session beers and get into beers that are lower in alcohol and lower in calories, because we love to drink beer, but we don't always love to get smashed or or to worry about all those calories. So you've got some beers that go along those lines as well.
Well, yeah, part of the thing is too is, we're a brew pub. Most of my beer is sold across the bar here on site. 94% of the beer I brew is sold over the bar here. And you know, part of that is yeah, I want a session beer. I want beer. I want a beer that somebody can hang out here and drink all night. You know, hang out for a few hours, drink plenty of beer, and not be so faded that they don't know how to get to home, or that they're going to drive, you know, and get a DUI or get in a wreck. You know, I want, you know, that's kind of our philosophy too. People are coming to us. And so we can't make too many big, crazy, strong beers. I definitely make some. I put them in there. I put them in the mix. But our mainstays are going to be around the 5-5.5% range, so that people can hang out here. We've got 20 pool tables up in this pool hall. We've got plenty of room for plenty of people to hang out and mingle, and that's kind of the thing. You know, you want to go out and be social sometimes.
And we're getting a lot of happy people in the background because there's about to be a ball game just down the street, and people are warming up a little bit, which is good. People are having fun, but let's. You know, we're talking to homebrewers out there who want to, you know, get some ideas into how to make some of these good recipes. Steve, you've got a question.
Well, I wanted you to tell us about your chili beer. We tried a little of that downstairs. I'm a big fan of chilies, especially as fans of Basic Brewing know. And this was just a remarkably good beer. And tell us about that beer and how we might approach that as homebrewers.
Well, that's a beer you want to keep. You want to keep it simple. You know, stick with a fairly light beer or a light, you know, a light ale or a light lager. You might want to do an ale because that's going to add a little bit of a, you know, a fruity element to it. But I mean, keep it simple. Don't think you got to go crazy with adding a whole bunch of different peppers. Keep it down to a couple. You know, that's going to help accentuate those flavors in those beers. And third is what people don't realize: if you boil those chilies, you're boiling most of the flavor out. Dry hop. Dry hop with them.
And you've got, tell us about the mixture of chilies that you've got.
Well, we use Anaheim green chilies, which we probably, I think per barrel it's about four pounds or so per barrel. And then we just use about two or three smoked ancho peppers in there just to give a hint of that smoked flavor. Because the main flavor we want in that beer is that Anaheim green chili.
And it's not an overheated beer. I mean, the heat is not the primary characteristic of the beer. What did you get out of it, Steve?
Oh, there wasn't any heat at all, really. A little bit when it laid on your tongue, but it was just that wonderful chili flavor, and it would pair so well with so many different foods. It's just a remarkable beer, and I applaud you for it.
How long would you leave the chilies in the beer? And I assume in secondary, since you're dry, not dry hopping, but dry chilying.
Well, I mean, that's going to depend on the intensity you want. I mean, I would say a minimum of probably 5 to 7 days. You know, but you also have to be careful. If you leave it in there too long, you know, you risk them just starting to break down and get kind of funky. So you have to, you know, it's going to be a trial and error because it's going to depend on the beer, you know, how strong the beer is too, the kind of chilies, you know, and how they were prepared as well. So that's something you got to, you know, you're going to have to play with depending on the chilies. Obviously, probably the fresher you use will probably last longer, but that's, you know, you may have to decide how long you actually want to leave them in there.
Do you, when you're preparing the Anaheim chilies, well, and the anchos too, do you go ahead and take the seeds and pith out, or do you just chunk them up whole, or how do you prepare the chili itself?
The green chilies, we just chop up the whole thing because they're still, you know, they're not dried anyway. They're still fairly wet. So I mean, we take the stem out, but the seed, there's still quite a bit of seeds in there. As far as the ancho pepper goes, since those are dried, they're a little bit easier to just kind of pluck off the top. You know, but you still end up with a decent amount of seeds. But the seeds aren't, if you're not cooking the seeds, they're not going to add really any kind of, you know, like bitter, you know, bitterness. Like you got to be careful when you boil a seed because you run the risk of something getting kind of bitter. So as long as you know, since you're not cooking them anyway, that's not going to play much of a factor. That I think those will sometimes, depending on the chili, will help just add a little bit of spiciness.
And you've also got a beer in celebration of Kurt Vonnegut that also has a little bit of coffee in there. Tell us about that one.
Well, that was a beer that was actually originally brewed before I was here. And it was a beer that was actually brewed kind of in conjunction with Kurt Vonnegut. Basically, a project that was done in 95 introduced John Hickenlooper, the owner and now the mayor of Denver, to Kurt Vonnegut. They found out that Kurt Vonnegut's college roommate was Hickenlooper's father. And so that kind of that got them talking and conversing quite a bit. And then Hickenlooper learned that Kurt Vonnegut's grandfather was the brewmaster owner of the Indianapolis City Brewery, and had won a prize or some kind of medal, and was famous for this German lager he brewed with coffee. And his prescription for brewing this beer was, he prescribed throwing the coffee into the mash with the rest of the grain. And so in doing that, we were told originally that it was a Dortmunder style beer, so we made a light lager and threw the coffee into the mash. So it's not a typical coffee beer. It's a light lager with a hint of coffee flavor in it. And I recreated that here just a couple months ago in honor, in memorial to Kurt Vonnegut, since he passed away in April. And we'll keep doing this from time to time to commemorate Kurt Vonnegut. He was a phenomenal author and contributed quite a bit to this country as far as his literary works go. He was a phenomenal author.
And the coffee, it's unlike any coffee beer I've had in the past. Whereas straight out of the tap and cold, you don't really get as much of the coffee impact, but as it warms, as you're chatting, and a beer warms, it starts to sneak up on you, and this kind of subtle, roasty coffee, almost chocolatey, wouldn't you say, Steve? Aroma starts to come through.
Yeah, a little bit chocolatey, but very restrained, and just a lovely, well balanced beer.
And you said that you put the coffee beans, the whole coffee beans, through the mill with the grain.
Yeah, that's according to Albert Lieber, Kurt Vonnegut's grandfather. That's how he prescribed making the beer. And those are words that he used in his recipe. Was that you put the coffee into the mash. So when I brewed it, I put it into my mill. Definitely the mill was not excited about having coffee beans thrown into there, but it turned out very well, and the mill survived, and we came out with a great beer.
And you said that a good strategy was to put it in the middle of the mix of the grains, so that the last half kind of cleans out all the coffee, so that the next light beer that you make is not also a coffee beer.
Well, yeah, true. You want to make, anytime, any beers I make, I always try and make sure any of the specialty grains go through the mill in the middle, right? Because you want to have, in your mash, you want to have your base of your pale malt, and then, you want your specialty stuff in the middle, and then, I always make sure it goes through the middle of the pale malt, so that you have plenty of pale malt to chase out any residuals from any other malts.
And how much coffee do you use in that beer?
Well, it's actually a very tiny amount comparatively, because there's about just over 1,000 pounds of grain in that, with only 24 pounds of coffee. And so the coffee makes quite a bit of an impact, but it's still, it's definitely there. You can taste it without a doubt, but it's still a subtlety to the beer.
So a little bit goes a long way.
Exactly. In darker beers, you have to use a lot more to make the coffee appear, right? So with a lighter beer, you can use much less and still get that great flavor.
That's a good point. Let's talk about, you also use grasses, lemon grasses, and things like that in another beer. Talk about that beer and your strategy and how that recipe is structured.
Well, I guess kind of with that beer. I've never understood the concept of adding fruit to beer, where people add lemons, limes, whatever. I don't like it when they do it with my Hefeweizen. I never have. And then I read somewhere of a Bavarian brewmaster And he was quoted as saying, if I wanted fruit in my beer, I would brew it in. And I think that's a little bit of where this beer came from. We use kaffir lime leaves, lemongrass, lemon verbena, and then a little bit of vanilla to kind of give a little underlying taste. But so basically, you have that citrusy lemon and lime flavor, and it's not strong. It's there. It's more there than the coffee, in the beer, but without being cloying. And being too much, it just makes for a great beer. And obviously, it's a great beer on a hot day, but it's definitely not. It's a little stronger than your typical session summer beer.
And I guess that's the. It's funny that you say that because and different people approach this in different ways. If I smoke ribs on the smoker all day, if somebody slathers it with barbecue sauce, I'm a little bit offended. I guess the same way if you craft, say, a nice Hefeweizen and get all those natural fruity flavors that come from the yeast and somebody sticks an orange or a lemon on the top, that's kind of offensive to you as well.
Well, people are going to do what they're going to do. But I remember seeing this too, is the adding the fruit to the beer is some kind of an American thing that they started doing with Corona for whatever reason, and then they started doing there. I mean, I have not, unfortunately, been to Germany yet, but I was told by somebody that when you're in Germany, you can tell the tourists because they're the ones with the fruit in their beer. The Germans don't drink their beer with a lemon or an orange in it.
I have a brother who drinks Busch Light. He always adds a slice of lime. He says it makes it taste better. I'm not surprised.
I was at a Mexican restaurant one time, and they brought me the best beer on the menu was a Bass, and they brought it to me with a lime slice stuck in the top of it. So, tell us about another one of your beers with using adjuncts in creative ways.
Well, I'm trying to think right now. Most of my beers, I try not to use too many adjuncts unless it calls for it. Obviously, coffee's a little different thing, and the spice beer. But the triple sixes I did, that's one where I had fun with that. I used three different kinds of sugar. I used a healthy amount of Pilsner malt, but I didn't want to use too much because that's the kind of beer you want to be a very light-bodied beer. And so I found several different, kinds of sugar. I mean, obviously, and this is if anybody who's brewed some Belgian beers is familiar with using some turbinado sugar. I decided to stop using the Belgian candy sugar because it's way too overpriced, and you get the same effect. You actually get a better flavor out of something like a turbinado sugar. And then I use I'm not sure if my pronunciation is proper, but the piloncillo, the Mexican brown sugar.
Oh yeah.
I used some of that. But then the funnest thing I had is I went to the Pacific Mercantile Company up the road, which is in like Sakura Square. It's a little Asian marketplace. They've got everything. And so I'm going through and I'm trying to find some kind of, exotic sugar, something, whether it's jaggery or whatever. I'm trying to find something. And I find this bin with a bunch of rock candy in it. And I look at that and I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then right next to it is something that just says brown candy. And I look at the ingredients, and it's just pure cane sugar and water, except it's all been caramelized in layers. And I was just like, this stuff would work great. And so I cleaned the store out of the 50 pounds of this brown candy they had, and added it into the triple. So there's the triple comes off definitely a little sweet. But you get that little bit of the caramelized sugar flavor going on, a little maple-y, a little caramelized sugar going. That triple I make is still one of the funnest beers I do.
So don't be afraid to play with your beer.
Exactly, you can't be. You can't. Like the style guidelines that are out there, BJCP, they're guidelines. They're not rules. You don't have to follow them. Do what you want to do. Do what tastes good to you. That's one thing I've been trying to get across for a long time too. Is a lot of my beers don't fit prettily, you know, very pretty into the little style guidelines. But, you know, I'm still one of the largest brew pubs in the country because people enjoy drinking them.
Excellent. Anything you want to add to that, Steve?
Just had a great Hefeweizen that didn't need any lemon.
There's no fruit anywhere near your glass.
No fruit anywhere near my glass.
Well, Thomas, we certainly enjoyed the tour. We've certainly enjoyed the beers and the advice. It's been good to talk to someone who has not come up from the homebrewer background, but has that homebrewer spirit.
Well, thanks. Well, that's what I'm not afraid to experiment and go for it myself. There's definitely been some brews I've done where some people were, you know, a little taken off by them, but, you know, they went through, but the thing is, too, is a brewery this size, when I've decided to go for something, I have to go for it in a fairly, you know, in a 300-gallon capacity. So, you know, sometimes it's, you know, just go for it. Do it.
Excellent. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Thomas Larson and the Wynkoop Brewing Company for the hospitality. Look for a video tour with Thomas and Steve in the upcoming episode of Basic Brewing Video. Next week, I plan to get more information on brewing with coffee from Chris Colby of Brew Your Own Magazine, so get your coffee beans ready. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop, where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we walk you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. It's easy once you know how, and we'll show you how in our DVD. You can see a growing listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order from us online. And remember, our shirts and hats, including our ever popular Go Forth and Flocculate shirt. Thanks to everybody also who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Elementary and Intermediate Algebra. School season's coming up there. School year's coming up. And also Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry 21.5-quart pressure cooker. So somebody's going to be canning some wort, maybe. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. We'll get a little bit of a kickback there when you do that, just a little, and you won't have to pay any more. Well, that's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson, our buddy in Austin, Texas, who also did our logo. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.